welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today we're linking up with a man who's best known for starring in E4's Made in Chelsea. He's the body of an athlete and documented that through his documentary Untold, obsessed with muscles. He then skated into the Dancing on Ice final as one of the favourites.
Didn't win. Thanks.
Miles Nazaire, welcome to the Monday Mile podcast.
Thank you so much. What an entrance.
How are you?
Can I say, body of an athlete. Wow. I've not had that before. That is amazing. Thank you very much. I'll take that. I am not an athlete, but yeah.
That's a strong intro.
Strong intro. Love that.
I think we actually first met probably through the gym.
I believe so.
In Kensington, probably about five years ago.
Oh my God, was it in Equinox?
Yeah.
You were on the mat stretching with your friend, I think.
Yeah.
Yes, I do remember this.
Doing the stretchy stretch and you were in there like...
trying to be like a bodybuilder.
Yeah, pounding like 50 kilo...
I was definitely not pounding 50 kilo dumbbells, but thank you for saying that. Yeah, we'll take that. I was.
Are you much of a walker?
I love walking. I have a dog, so I have to walk all the time.
Has Rocky changed that for you?
Yeah, 100%. I think actually, you know what? One of the things that, and I know we'll talk about this later with my training, but because I walk so much, I now have less stress on like cardio. Because I used to love cardio, just so much cardio. And now, because I have to walk like 2-3 times a day, and then sometimes do a run with him, because he's a working dog, I'm all good, I'm all set. So yeah, it's definitely changed.
So he's given you a new purpose.
Yeah, steps.
In the walks.
Yeah, 100%.
How are you finding having a dog? Because it's almost like undertaking a child, especially when you live in London.
It is a child. I was so naive when I got this dog. I thought, you know when you watch movies and you got your friend's dog, you're like, so cute. That's what I want, a best friend. When I got that child, because it is a fur baby, wow, the amount of work I had to put in, the amount of money I am spending on my dog. Not even on, like, I'm about to go away and he goes to this dog hotel and it's like way more bougie than any hotel I go to. Like, it's really, really fun. He's got a field to run in. He's like the most, like, he's so lucky, that dog, honestly. And it's a lot of work, but I love him.
Is it hindering in any way? Because I don't know. I feel like my lifestyle could be similar to yours in that. Mm. Young, single, living in London.
I mean, we're not that young, are we? Are we? I thought my back's starting to hurt.
My back, it was quite bad this morning, actually.
Neck, little crank, and I'm just like, okay, I can't move. I think my lifestyle's changed. And because the lifestyle changed, having a dog was kind of the perfect timing. I think if I was still back in the days where I was going out loads, partying, and less responsibility, then it would have been really hard to have a dog. Whereas now I find it a lot easier to actually have a dog and be a dog dad. And it kind of looks cool. You know, you're walking down the King's Road, you've got the dog.
Do you reckon it's like a bit of a pulling magnet?
The thing is, you know what? Everyone has asked me, like, oh, you must get loads of guys coming to you. Nope, I do not.
Really?
I get lots of mums. Loads of mum goes, oh, I love your little dog. I'm like, do you have a daughter? Can I meet the daughter? No, I think it's a film thing. Like, I've not got any more girls in my life because of my dog.
My brother actually did quite similar, but slightly different situation. He got a Chihuahua called Mojo, who has now become the family dog.
Okay.
Because it didn't quite work for him as a pulling magnet. So yeah. It's now,
I mean, a Chihuahua,
my nan's daughter.
That makes more sense. I think a Chihuahua for a guy, you're not getting a lot of girls.
But I feel like girls like, you know, oh, cute.
Small
little
dogs, like a Pomeranian, yeah. I don't think a Chihuahua is one of those cute kind of dogs. I feel like you need, like, I'm very, like, weird with dogs. If I see a little Chihuahua, I'm like, that's not a dog. Okay? Like, it's not a dog, is it?
I love my dog. Right, let's talk fitness. So we met in Equinox.
Yeah.
It must have been 5 years ago.
Wow, yeah.
Crazy.
Oh my God, yeah, yeah.
Would you say you are a self-confessed fitness addict?
I used to be. Okay. I don't think I am anymore. I think I care less about fitness. Whereas when I met you, I was in a place where fitness was my whole life. If I didn't train a certain way, if I didn't eat a certain way, I wasn't okay. So it took over my life. So I definitely was in a headspace of like, yeah, fitness and that's it.
It's quite scary being in a position where the gym, nutrition, food,
yeah,
can eventually rule you. Mm. I can connect to that from, say, when I was an athlete. But when you're an athlete, you almost have an excuse and a reason to go to bed early,
yeah,
eat a certain way.
But you have like functional training, right? Your training has purpose. Whereas I think it's great when I see people in their early 20s or even their teens starting to train and they get really into it. There's a fine line of being fit and healthy, enjoying it, and then an unhealthy obsession with trying to like be a certain way and look a certain way.
Did you catch yourself in that point, or did somebody else bring it to your attention?
I didn't realize I was in it. I actually don't know what moment I realized it. There was a significant person in my life that left, and it was at that moment that I had realized, oh, I wasn't healthy. And I find it really interesting when you look at these amazing fitness people and people in the gym. Some of the people who look the most shredded and look insane are actually the people that are most unhealthy mentally and actually physically.
I think it can bring a lot of unhappiness because essentially your life can be ruled and dictated by the regime
of course.
Working out.
Yeah. Yeah. So
did you enjoy it?
I loved it. I mean, I didn't know it was a problem. It got bad. I mean, I was going to like dinners with my friends and bringing Tupperware with me.
No.
Oh, yeah, and asking the kitchen to reheat it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I remember I was in Jack's once and I think it was my friend's birthday.
And Jack's, you can go and be like, oh, really my God. Healthy. I swear. Tuna, steak and broccoli.
There we go, 100%. Because I didn't know about fitness or diet. It was so interesting. You probably think, oh, because I looked a certain way, I knew so much about what to eat and all that. No, I didn't. I didn't know anything about food. I didn't know anything about actually anything to do in that kind of section. I was just doing what I thought was the right thing, which was this kind of, social media didn't really help as well, like watching bodybuilders and eating chicken and rice and being on this severe diet, constantly bulking, cutting. And it was like this whole like, yeah, I want to be this guy. I don't even know why I wanted to be that guy. It just happened.
Do you think there's an element of addiction once you get into the routine of being that way?
Yeah. You can easily get really, really self-obsessed, and not in the arrogant way. You know, being so self-obsessed when you're like this and when you get into this kind of regime, you know, you think it's healthy because you've got discipline.
Yeah.
And you've got like a routine, but you end up judging every aspect of your body. You start like really overanalyzing everything about your being, and that is super unhealthy.
And I guess, was this the start of the documentary?
Yeah, so I got out of it and my team said, oh, you know, Channel 4 do these untold stories and they know that you're massively in your training, and they asked me, did you have an issue? And this is when I didn't realize, did you think you had an issue with muscle dysmorphia? They want to talk about it. And I then had a research meeting, as you do in TV, spoke to the researcher. They secretly diagnosed me with muscle dysmorphia without telling me.
They secretly diagnosed?
Well, yeah, because they were like,
That's quite scary.
Yeah, because they asked all the questions about, oh, how do you feel about your body, about this and about that and all these things. And I was answering them just nonchalant, like, yeah, this is how I see myself and whatever. And then later down the line, you are either out of it or getting out of it now, but you had a severe muscle dysmorphia problem.
And for those people that don't know, what is muscle dysmorphia?
So muscle dysmorphia is very similar to body dysmorphia. It's in the same family tree. Essentially, it's massively viewed for women, and rightly so, because, you know, over the years, decades, women have been perceived in a certain way because of magazines, because of modeling, loads of eating disorders. We're in this kind of weird place where we constantly want to be really lean and we want to be bigger. So we always look ourselves in the mirror thinking we're tiny. So you look at yourself thinking that you're not actually quite big. So you've got this chase of becoming this really, really big person and muscly. And basically you never see that in yourself when you look in the mirror. And that's what basically muscle dysmorphia is trying to do everything you can. So that could be surgery, steroids, overeating, undereating, to look as like a bodybuilder.
Were you shot?
On the Untold documentary, I got diagnosed there, live, in that moment. So I had no idea when we were meeting the foundation and talking to the specialist that they were gonna diagnose me with muscle dysmorphia. So at the end of the series, I was like, oh yeah, I did have it, which was a bit weird.
That's kind of weird because that's essentially being taken out of control and yeah. then catapulted into the public eye.
Mm.
Were you okay with sharing that publicly?
Yeah, I think for me, I just genuinely know that so many of my fellow gym goers and my friends in the gym all suffer with a mild amount of muscle dysmorphia. And I thought it was a really good place for me, someone that I think a lot of people don't think I have issues or problems in life, would come out of this and talk about this issue. Because I think, you know, especially when it comes to guys, we don't really talk emotionally, and when our things are going bad, we don't really speak up. And so many guys in the gym go through this daily. So I thought it'd be a really good place where hopefully I could help people.
Massively so, because I think so many people are unaware of those issues with size, yeah. with plastic surgery,
yeah.
and don't maybe see it as a problem, yet they're still being controlled by it. It's different when you're an athlete, but to go and physically change your body because you're not happy with it.
Yeah. You as an athlete, did you ever feel, but it's very weird because I've got a lot of friends who are athletes, and the body thing was never really a big thing because they were training for functionality and a purpose in strength, training, conditioning, all that kind of stuff. Because when it was on match day or game day or whatever it was for their sport, they had to perform for that. So obviously for you, professional snowboarder,
yeah,
which is sick, by the way.
I know you're a skier. We won't mention
Hey, I'll give you a little bit. I used to be a skateboarder.
Oh, okay.
And I skied because it was the only option.
Right.
I know I would be a sick snowboarder. Because I can surf really well.
Okay, we need to test that. Maybe I'll ski and you can snowboard.
Yeah, okay.
Level things out.
Okay. So yeah, did you ever have an issue?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is you're right. You hit the nail on the head with function. Function is always the purpose of training and the motivation. But yet there's still something within being an athlete where you're propositioned as an athlete to look a certain way.
Okay.
So interestingly, I'd say towards the latter end of my career, I would have felt a pressure to look like an athlete.
Yeah.
So yeah, I, being open and honest, there was definitely an element of that for me, which maybe was the wrong motivation.
Yeah.
And I'd say I'm now in a place where I went, you know, from one extreme to the other, and now I'm much happier and much more balanced in that.
Yeah.
When it comes to your journey, you've done the documentary, you've spoken out about it, you had plastic surgery. Do you look back on that now and think, wow, what was I doing?
It's weird because in America, it's really common to get gynecomastia surgery. Really
okay,
common.
What is that for those listening?
Gynecomastia is, a lot of people say gyno, and a lot of people stupidly refer it to steroid use, because that is one of the common ways of having it. It's a huge inflation of estrogen, and then you get this tissue mass behind your nipple and it forms like a hard lump. That is for steroid users. I've never taken steroids, and I think if people still to this day think I have, trust me, if I did, I would be
huge.
It's
because you've got a good body. I know, but you're an athlete.
Yeah, I'd be huge. But yeah, so I basically, men go through this stage when they go through puberty around 12 years old, and it will have a build up, but it will dissipate. So it will go away. Mine never went. So I always had this mass behind my nipples, and I never really noticed it until I started training. So I started really training. Like, I was doing 5Ks every day just for my...
Every day? That's a little obsessive.
Yeah, so this is when I did my transformation. So when I did my 12-week transformation, it was like 5Ks every day in the morning on a treadmill, fasted.
Yeah.
And then weight training in the afternoon. When I did that, obviously... If you're doing that and you're also in a calorie deficit, I leaned up real quick, real fast, which was great because at the time I wanted to, like, I was a bit puffy and I wanted to lean up and whatever. But I already noticed, like, the gyno coming out, so I could see the lump. Bothered me because I'd always have to, like, pinch my nipples. Like, you'll see it in a lot of models, or models, like, before they do a shoot, they pinch the nipples so they go erect. So it, like, makes your chest look...
We call that nippon.
Nippon? Is that a thing?
Oh, wow. When you're cold, you're oh, I've got a nippon.
Well, I wanted a nippon for life. I wanted. Because it would hide the lump.
Okay.
So I was doing that all the time, and I was getting a bit self-conscious. And it's weird. I sort of regret it and don't regret it. I regret it in the sense that I didn't do it right.
Yeah.
So I got a huge lump. If you look at my videos, like, it was like a piece of steak. that big in my chest, got rid of it.
Wow.
But then it left to like an empty pocket in my chest. So you won't really notice it, but I notice it. So in a weird way, I regret it because I'm like, oh, have I just made it worse and made my view of myself? Because no one saw it. Because I was asking people and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. You've got normal nipples. And I was like, no, I don't. I can feel this lump. And I did a surgery and I'm happy I did it, but I'm also annoyed that I did it. So I'm a bit conflicted.
Okay, that's interesting.
But yeah, I went under and I did it. And it's a weird one because a lot of people are like, oh, would you tell people to not do it then? Because, you know, it's a really a mental space where, you know, it shouldn't come to plastic surgery. You should be happy with your body.
The thing is, not everybody is happy with their body. So I think plastic surgery in itself is a really interesting topic because some people are all for finding that happiness and looking for it within the body they're in.
Yeah.
And then other people are like, if you don't like it, change it.
Yeah.
And I don't think there is a right or wrong.
Yeah.
It's whatever makes you feel content.
I think with plastic surgery, if you are insecure and it's going to make you feel more positive about yourself, stronger, and just feel a bit more like, okay, you know, confidence, 100% do it. Then there's a fine line of doing that and then going, oh, maybe a bit more there, or maybe I should do a nose job. Oh, maybe my cheek should go up. And you're like, okay, now you're looking like a Barbie doll or, you know, Action Man. And that's when the problem lies, is overdoing it. But I do believe, like, if you don't like your nose and you got bullied at school for it, whatever it was, and you want to do it for yourself and no one else, then go ahead. That's what you want to do.
Today,
yeah.
Would you change anything? Are you happy with who you are as we walk today?
Very deep question. And yes, I am very happy.
Hey, that's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's taken me a long time to accept me and my body. So weird, because I think a lot of people think, oh, mate, you know, he loves himself. He loves his body. He trains hard and he's got no bad view on his self. Trust me, when I was the leanest and probably looked the best, it was probably the toughest time where I judged myself the most. Like, I look at pictures and go, wow, that looks amazing. But at that time, I thought I looked shit.
Does it hurt you that people may say those things? Oh, he loves himself. Oh, he thinks he looks the best.
I understand the industry I'm in, and I understand that it's free judgment because that's the place I put myself into. But it doesn't really affect me because the people around me know me, love me, and really know who I am. They don't base it on a TV edit or social media stuff. And that's why my social media has changed massively. Like, if you looked at my social media a year ago, it was thirst traps. It was just pictures of myself and just, I never post pictures unless it's a carousel, only video content now. And it's all about trying to help others and build confidence in themselves. That's why I built a community recently, done a life in run club, all these sort of things. So I've shifted in the last year and a half for sure.
It's a huge, huge transition actually.
Yeah.
That transition in the last year has been huge for you.
Yeah.
When it comes to your routine, how has your day-to-day changed looking back at that period of time when you were in the thick of the documentary to now?
It's really like, I feel relief, to be honest with you. Like, I had no control over my diet, my training. It was so regimented. And although that sounds like control, that was the problem. I didn't have this, people call balance. I used to do an extreme to the other. Now I get to eat what I want. I get to enjoy life. I train how I want. I don't have a specific way of training. I train for function more now. I do a bit of strength training. And if I want to do an arm day, I'll do an arm day. If I want a bit of a pump just to feel good about myself, I'll do it. It's a weird balance because muscle dysmorphia, especially, a lot of people ask me, like, oh, now you're out of it. How does it feel? I'm like, I'm not completely out of it. I will always have muscle dysmorphia within me. It will always live in me. And then sometimes I look in the mirror and I'm not happy. What I can do now is that I can control my controllables, control the emotion I have over it, understand where I've come and look at myself and be really proud of, you know, the body I've created over the years. And also now being in a place where, yesterday I had a chocolate almond croissant followed up with a croissant with eggs in it. I see that as good food, as long as I don't overdo it. It's like, I know that when maybe I've eaten a little bit too much on the weekend, that my session will be a little bit sweatier, and that is all it is. I get to enjoy it. But it's really weird because I'm so happy I did have that discipline, the crazy regiment discipline, because if I didn't, I wouldn't be able to know how to eat now. As much as I enjoy my food more and I get to eat more and I go to restaurants, not out of Tupperware, and I eat like, you know, I look at the menu and go, oh, I'll have this and this and this. If I didn't have that in the beginning, I don't think I'd be able to understand food now. I had to go to the extreme to now find the balance.
So it's given you essentially a sense of freedom.
Yeah.
As well as knowledge.
Yeah.
Because I think so many people actually don't know what is healthy. And it really sounds like you've got freedom in that balance.
Yeah.
That's a very hard state to achieve.
Yeah, for sure. Finding that balance, finding the enjoyment of eating and training for yourself as well. I think what a lot of things that we do is we train for other people, other viewers. It's like, oh, I want to look this way. Like, why do you want to look this way?
To impress other people.
Like,
right?
My friend was like, we did a shoot with a drinks brand and they posted a picture and it's him like in the water. We did a cold plunge and he doesn't really show his abs, but he's like a stacked dude. Tristan, if you're listening, you're my boy, I love you. And he asked me, he was like, oh, mate, I don't have abs. Like, do you think that's a bit weird? I looked at him, I went, you look way better like this. You look like the guy from Aquaman. You look big, like a rugby boy, and you don't need abs. But for who? And he was like, yeah, chill, I'm not trying to impress anyone. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, who are you doing it for? Unless you want to feel a bit lean and do it for yourself, 100%. But until then, mate, do it for yourself. It's fine. Yeah. You look great in that picture. And that's what I think I want people to do, is more self-talk like that. Your boy's telling you look great.
Go on, the lads.
You have to.
And that's important.
Yeah.
That communication with men.
Yeah, 100%. You've got to have that open communication, because I think it's very easy in boys groups. You know, I think now in society, it's great that we get to be way more vulnerable and emotional with each other in the boys. But there's still that kind of like, boys shouldn't talk about their emotions. Shouldn't say this. And you should do this. And it's nice to see that that's slowly breaking away.
You've spent a large portion of your life in reality TV.
Yeah.
You went to Brit school. Do you think you were destined for reality, or is that changing?
So my dad always wanted me to be an actor. So he was, not that he was disappointed, he was super happy for me to do the reality TV. I think because I was in the creative industry, I was always going to do something in film, TV, radio, whatever it was going to be. TV found me. I found out I was very good at it. And I'm really like happy I did it, because it's kind of made me able to do all these things now and have the platform I have and live the lifestyle that I want, which is great. But now I'm focusing on different things. You know, I don't know how much longer I'll be into reality. Not, this is a little exclusive here, but you know, next year may look very, very different for any viewers of Chelsea, and also just in terms of the next project. Also, I just want to do my personal businesses and see where that takes me. And I've also actually entered, well, my dad has put me in a French film that's going to be shown at the Cannes Film Festival. So I'm doing a short film, and it's like a very big director, producer who've done like big films in France. So I am now tapping into the film industry, which is going to be interesting.
There you go. There's the exclusive.
Yeah.
You also spent a bit of time in Australia this year.
Yes, I did.
You tapped into Made in Bondi.
Made
now,
in Bondi, yeah.
Me and my best friend have this thing. It's called like, you know, the holiday vibe.
Yeah.
So when you're away, you're slightly more carefree, so to speak, because you're out of your regime or routine. When you were out there, did you find, even though you were being filmed, you were doing a TV show, you had that sort of holiday spirit, which allowed you to sort of be a little more carefree?
Yeah, 100%. It was a holiday. It was work, even though we were filming every day, but it was so easy because we were in Australia, first of all. Like you said, there was no routine that I had to get up to, no dog, no nothing. Like, it was very much, I'm here to have a good time. I'm here for a month, and you let yourself a bit go, and it's great.
Did it allow for greater spontaneity than, say, filming here for Made in Chelsea?
100%. In London, I love, you know, it's great filming here and we get to do amazing things. But when we were out there, it was so much fun to discover new culture, new people and do different things. And also the culture in Australia, which I love, is they wake up at like 6 a.m. They're all in doing gym classes. Everyone's running. Yeah, it was definitely an amazing trip, for sure.
That's a bit of you. That's a bit of me.
I was in Australia
this year, actually. I was there in February. We flew through Bondi for a couple of days.
Yeah,
but we did Perth, Melbourne.
Yeah.
And Sydney. You just can't go wrong, can you?
Yeah, 100%.
Miles, we are on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. We like to ask all of our guests what their relationship is like with Monday. Do you like a Monday?
So it's so weird that you chose this. I literally posted up this morning on my Life In channel about Mondays. My thing is, at the moment, is try not to escape the life you have. Build the life you want on your weekends and have the Monday as not, oh, I've got to go to work, and have a Monday as like, I'm building the life I want. So every day you're trying to build and build. And then one day you'll be able to be like, oh, I work for myself, or I'm doing this, I've achieved this, I've got my, you know, university degree, whatever it is, and be excited by each day and not feel the slog of, oh, it's Monday. So yeah, I'd say definitely look at Mondays in a different way, not as a start of the week and it's a long week. Think of it as the building process of your life.
So we're building today.
We're building today.
What are we building today?
Well, the legs later. Gotta build the tin. I'm building, hopefully, the life I want my kids to live. It's weird. There's a question that I've never thought I'd ask myself, like, what is my purpose in life? Amazing career and, you know, happy family and good friendships and all these sort of things. But I'm excited to be a dad one day. And I really want to build a life for my future kids. I want them to never have a stress or worry that I've had in my life. Not that it has not built me up to be the person I am today, but yeah, I want to make sure that I've done everything I can now for them.
That is so strong, Miles.
Thanks.
There's huge depth to you.
So I know, some would think I'm just a reality star. In some ways I am, but there is a heart in there somewhere.
And lastly, Miles, we like to ask all of our guests if there's a life motto or quote that you live by,
yeah,
that you can share with our listeners.
So for me, I've actually got it tattooed on my chest. This too shall pass. And this references to good or bad. When you're in a really bad place, remember this will pass and it will. Trust yourself, trust the process, embrace the emotions. And when you're happy and everything's going right, remember that will pass too. And that means cherish that moment, be in it, live it, and don't run so quickly that beautiful moment passes so quickly. So in both ways, good or bad, know that this too shall pass.
We're in it. We're living it.
We're living it.
Monday Mile listeners, thank you so much for joining us. You know what to do. Make sure you subscribe and listen to the audio. It drops at 12 a.m. every single Monday morning for the early risers. Miles, I absolutely love that.
Thank you.
You've got the gym to get to.
Yeah.
You've got a dog to go and get from Doggy Daycare.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. I've got to pick up Rocky. Thank
you. Monday Mile listeners, it's a wrap. Boom. Thank
Amazing.
You.
No worries, that was great.
It was so
really
good.
I enjoyed that.
For those of you that are still listening, I think we've just walked 1.6 miles and I can confirm, I think you walked faster than Gabby Logan, who's been the fastest walker on the podcast yet.
That's right.
You even were out of breath.
Yeah, well, so my life is... No, I love it. I love a walk. I walk fast really all the time.
Though. I love a walk as well.
Yeah.
Boom.